One of the difficulties we have, and it's not just modern society, it's always been the case, things that are imaginary, we have lots of people that seem to flock to it, to latch onto it, to want it to be true. And yet things that are real, people dismiss as just fables. Satan's one of those beings that the Bible talks about that people today just don't really grasp that he's real. Jesus warned Peter in Luke chapter 22. Luke 22 and in verse 31. Simon, Simon, behold, Satan has demanded permission to sift you as wheat. Think about the implications of what Jesus says. Jesus sees Satan as a real being, one that makes demands, one that we need to be aware of. Satan wanted Peter, much like Satan wanted Job in Job chapter 1. Job chapter 1 and verse 6. Now there was a day when the sons of God came to present themselves before the Lord, and Satan came among them. The Lord said to Satan, "From where do you come?" And Satan answered the Lord and said, "From roaming about on the earth and walking around on it." The Lord said to Satan, "Have you considered my servant Job? For there is no one like him on the earth, a blameless and upright man, fearing God and turning away from evil." And then Satan said to the Lord, "Does Job fear God for nothing? Have you not set a hedge about him and his house and all that he has on every side? You have blessed the work of his hands and his possessions and have increased in the land. But put forth your hand now and touch what he has, and he will surely curse you to his face." And the Lord said to Satan, "Behold, all that he has is in your power. Only do not put forth your hand on him." So Satan departed from the presence of the Lord. Now, if you're going to say this is just a fable, this is just a myth, where do you draw the line? It's the Lord talking to Satan, having a conversation. Satan's among the angels in this particular case. No, we have to understand, Satan is a real being. And Peter warned us that Satan wants each one of us. He wants a piece of us. He wants all of us. Take a look at 1 Peter chapter 5. 1 Peter 5 and starting with verse 8. "Be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. But resist him, firm in your faith, knowing that the same experiences of suffering are being accomplished by your brethren who are in the world." Satan is our adversary. He's the one that we need to be careful of. And we need to understand who we battle against. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, 2 Corinthians 2 and verse 10, but one whom you forgive anything, I forgive also. For indeed, if I have forgiven anything, I did it for your sakes in the presence of God, Christ, so that no advantage would be taken of us by Satan, for we are not ignorant of his schemes. Satan is looking for every little advantage he can get. We have to be aware of what he's after and what he is doing. Satan has a lot of devices, things that he does to try to bring us down. First and foremost, we need to understand that Satan is a liar. In John chapter 8, and in verse 44, "You are of your father the devil, and you want to do the desires of your father. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth because there is no truth in him. Whenever he speaks a lie, he speaks from his own nature, for he is a liar and the father of lies. There's where one of the problems comes in. When we're dealing with things that Satan has influenced, we don't know if we're dealing with the truth. Because Satan lies. Constantly. Always. This is native language. It should not be then surprising that he spends his time deceiving people. Take a look at Revelation 20 and verse 10. And the devil who deceived them was thrown into the lake of fire and brimstone, where the beast and the false prophet also are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and ever. But I want you to notice the beginning of that. The devil who deceived them. What's behind all the problems that we have in the world? Satan has fooled people into doing things that are corrupt. That are harmful. That are wrong. And not just Satan himself, but his followers follow after the practices of their leader. In 2 Corinthians again, this time in chapter 11, 2 Corinthians 11 and in verse 13, for such men are false prophets or false apostles, deceitful workers, disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. No wonder, for even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. Therefore, it's not surprising if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness, whose end will be in according to their deeds. Satan fools people, his followers act like they're righteous when they're really not. And people fall for it. And sometimes you look at it and you say, why? It's such an obvious lie. Why do people fall for it? And it seems almost trivial, but in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, 2 Thessalonians 2 and verse 9, it says, this is the one who is coming is in accord with the activity of Satan, with all power and signs and false wonders, and with all the deception of wickedness for those who perish, because they did not receive the love of the truth so as to be saved. Why do people fall for it? Because they really don't love the truth either. And so they'll swallow a lie, especially if it gives them what they want. See, Satan just turns everything backwards. Gary and I were talking about that last time, Sunday evening, I think it was. Or no, Wednesday evening. We were talking about that, you know, everything's backwards. This is what Satan does. In Isaiah chapter 5 and verse 20. Woe to those who call good evil good and good evil, who substitute darkness for light and light for darkness, who substitute bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter. Things that are obviously wrong, they're made out to be righteous. Things that are obviously righteous, well, then suddenly now there's something wrong with you for holding those standards. And you can see that in the garden when we first are introduced to Satan. In Genesis chapter 3, in Genesis chapter 3, starting at verse 1, it says, now the serpent was more crafty than any of the beasts of the field which God had made. And he said to the woman, indeed, has God said, you shall not eat from any tree of the garden? And the woman said to the serpent, from the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but the fruit of the tree which is in the middle of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat from it or touch it, or you will die. The serpent said to the woman, you shall not surely die. That's a lie. For God knows in the day that you eat from it, your eyes will be opened and you'll be like God, knowing good and evil. There's another lie there. You'll be like God. Satan told falsehoods. He reversed what was good and evil. He made it out that, hey, breaking God's commandment was actually a good thing. And that God's commandment was somehow bad for people. You see it today. You deserve to be happy. There's no absolute truth. A loving God would not send anyone to hell. Complete lies. But if he can't get you by the lies, Satan will distract you. Get your mind on other things. Jesus warns in Mark chapter 4 and in verse 18. Talking about the parable of the sower, and he says, the others are the ones whom the seed has sown among the thorns. These are the ones which have heard the word, but the worries of the world and the deceitfulness of riches and the desire for other things enter in and choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. He might not get you with an outright lie, but he'll get you distracted so that you're focused on this world instead of the world to come. Oh, it's so easy to fall into the trap of, I got to make more money. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 9. But those who want to get rich fall into a temptation and a snare, and many foolish and harmful desires which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it wander away from the faith and pierce themselves with many griefs. It's not money, it's time. Think about how many demands on our times that keeps us distracted. In Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 14. For this reason it says, awake, sleeper, and arise from the dead, and Christ will shine on you. Therefore be careful how you walk, not as unwise but as wise, making the most of your time, because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand the will of the Lord. You got to make the most of your time, because the world's going to demand it. And we only have a limited amount. By keeping us loving the world, we lose the love of God. In 1 John chapter 2, 1 John chapter 2, starting in verse 15, do not love the world, nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the boastful pride of life, is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away, and also its lust. But the one who does the will of God lives forever. But Satan wants us distracted. And one way he can get us distracted is by keeping us discontented. That was one of Israel's problems. They did not appreciate what God had done for them. In Numbers chapter 21, Numbers 21 and starting at verse 5, the people spoke against God and Moses. Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in the wilderness? For there is no food, no water, and we loathe this miserable food. Which I always found interesting. There's no food, we loathe this food. The Lord sent fiery serpents among the people, and they bit the people so that many of the people of Israel died. They were discontented. They started rebelling against God. which is exactly what Satan wants. And they died for that. Take a look at Psalms 106. Psalms 106. And look at verse 24. Then they despised the pleasant land. They did not believe in his word, but grumbled in their tents. They did not listen to the voice of the Lord. Therefore he swore to them that they would be cast down in the wilderness, and that he would cast their seed among the nations and scatter them in the lands. Being grumpy and grumbling is worse than you think. People died over that. And Paul warns us, don't be like them. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians 10 and in verse 10, nor grumble as some of them did and were destroyed by the destroyer. And so instead, Christians are told we have to do everything without complaint. Philippians chapter 2 and in verse 14, do all things without grumbling or disputing. Because discontented people don't work together. And see, that's another thing that Satan wants. He'll sow discord, dissensions, divisions. He wants people fractured. And Jesus points out the reason. He's actually talking about Satan himself, but in Matthew chapter 12, Matthew 12 and in verse 25, Jesus says, and knowing their thoughts, Jesus said to them, any kingdom divided against itself is laid waste, and any house or city divided against itself will not stand. It's just a plain fact. When people are at each other's throat, they will not function. How do you take down a nation? Get the people discontented and angry with each other, so they won't work together. How do you take down a church? Get people grumbling and discontented and angry with each other, and it will not stand. How do you destroy a family? Same way. It doesn't change. That's why God finds dissension so disgusting. Take a look at Proverbs chapter 6. Proverbs 6, and starting with verse 16. There are six things which the Lord hates. Seven which are an abomination to him. Haughty eyes, a lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and one who spreads strife among the brethren. People that ought to be united, getting divided. When we are at each other's throats, the message gets muddied. Why do you think Jesus emphasized a new command in John chapter 13? John chapter 13 and verse 34, he says, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, even as I had loved you, that you love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. It's not an option. It's not a be nice if we have it type thing. It's absolutely critical to our survival. Because by dividing us, he isolates us. You can tell when people start to fall away. I've watched it over the years, decades of doing it. They start talking as if they are separate from the people of the church. No, you people are too strict. You folks are not hospitable enough. You don't have enough love. As if they're not a part of the group themselves. They've been isolated. And another sign is their attendance becomes more increasingly sporadic. Fewer services, fewer Bible classes. All of that weakens the fellowship that we have. You know, there's a reason to come together as a church. The Corinthians were doing it for the wrong reasons. In fact, Paul says in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, 1 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 17, "But in giving this instruction, I do not praise you, because you come for the better, not for the better, but for the worse. For in the first place, when you come together as a church, I hear that divisions exist among you, and in part I believe it." This time that we have as people of God is a time for us to build unity. And so many people in the world, you can hear about it all the time. Congregations get together and there's this side and this side doesn't talk to that side. We're here to encourage each other. In Hebrews chapter 10, Hebrews 10 and verse 23, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider how to stimulate one another to love and good deeds, not forsaking our own assembling together as a habit of some, but encouraging one another, and all the more that as you see the day drawing near." Our purpose here is to give us strength so that we can stand against Satan. So what does Satan want us to do? Well, he'll get us isolated so we don't have that strength to draw on. So we're not encouraged. So we start forgetting God's word. And after all, if you want to pick off somebody as an enemy, think about it as a soldier. One at a time is a whole lot easier than group. Satan wants easy pickings. And so he'll discourage us. See, discouragement diminishes our enthusiasm. It hinders our own personal growth. It keeps us from encouraging other people so they don't grow. There's a reason why Paul said in Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6 and in verse 9. "Let us not lose heart in doing good, for in due time we will reap if we do not grow weary." Oh, that's so easy. Day in and day out, keep trying to do something. After a while, you start feeling like you're getting tired of it. We need to remember, we're not the first. We're not the only ones. The Bible's full of people who lived and worked for God despite incredible odds. And so in the Hebrew writer, after listing out so many heroes of faith, said in Hebrews chapter 12 and verse 1, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us. And let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." I found an interesting quote by William Ward. He He said, discouragement is dissatisfaction with the past, distaste for the present, and distrust of the future. It is ingratitude for the blessings of yesterday, indifference to the opportunities of today, and insecurity regarding strength for tomorrow. It is unawareness of the presence of beauty, unconcern for the needs of our fellow man, and unbelief in the promises of old. It is impatient with time, immaturity of thought, and impoliteness of God. I think that well sums it up. Satan wants to destroy the works of God. There's hints in the scripture that Satan basically thinks, well, he ought to have been God himself, and he wants to destroy the works of God. Well, guess what? We are God's work. Satan doesn't care about us. We're just in the way of his destruction. And don't think it can't happen to you. Take a look at 1 Corinthians chapter 10. 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 12. Therefore, let him who thinks he stands take heed that he does not fall. Don't think you're immune. In fact, that's why we had that scripture reading. What we have to learn is put up a fight. In Ephesians chapter 6, in verse 10, it says, finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of his might. Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God so that you will be able to resist in the evil day. And having done everything, to stand firm. Are you putting up a fight? Or are you giving in to Satan's schemes and wiles? I hope you'll think about these things. If there's anyone here today who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like to praise your brother on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.